Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, beautiful humans. If a professional, polished, well-edited podcast is what you're after, then move right on.
If, however, you love unfiltered banter, unedited bloopers, authentic heart sharing, and a very generous dash of holistic health education, then you're in the right place.
Let's dive in, shall we? Hi, friends. Welcome back to the Holistic Health Podcast. We've had a little bit of a rough start here. my internet has not played ball. I had to hand over the baton and make Amy the host. I've relocated. It's just all happening. So we're hoping that this time it's going to stick.
Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed, friends. Fingers crossed.
Oh, wowzers. Well, we have persisted because we've got a really exciting episode. We've got some really good feedback on the first preconception episode that we did in relation to female preconception care, where we talked about diet or nutrients. And so now we really wanted to open up the conversation around supplementation because it is a big one. And I think that it can be very overwhelming as someone who's going on a preconception care journey. Mm-hmm. You know, what do I take? I'm getting mixed messages. I know for a lot of clients that first come to me, they can feel a little bit conflicted in that they're told one thing by the GP or the doctor, and then, you know, another thing by perhaps me. And so I thought we'd open up that conversation around, well, what are we as clinicians that are working in that fertility space, what are we recommending from a nutrient perspective or a supplement perspective and why? So that there's not so much confusion around, you know, I guess the standard is just take Elevate and I'm fine to name names here. Like that's just the general recommendation and perhaps why there are better options.
Oh my God, I am really passionate about this subject actually. And I can feel like my blood pressure rising as you're talking because, you know, the current recommendations are incredibly outdated. They are not in alignment with best practice or current research and completely disrespects some of the challenges of bioindividuality and genetic polymorphisms. And of course, in a perfect world, you'd have maybe something custom made for you and all the rest of it. We're not quite there yet. So when you're choosing a, you know, prenatal supplements in general, but a prenatal multivitamin in particular, you have to account for the most challenging denominator so that the entire collection of women who take it are served, as opposed to just some of them, and putting some of the others at risk. So I will do my best not to get my knickers in a goddamn knot to talk about this.
You're already starting to twist. I can see them.
I know. I didn't expect this either because we're focusing on what to do rather than what not to do. But it's kind of that's just part of the conversation, isn't it? And really in explaining why our recommendations are different to someone that you think should know better, and that is your GP or maybe your fertility advisor.
Yeah, well, it's like sometimes the way I think of this, and it's taken some time to wrap my head around it and feel okay to say this out loud, is that this is not the hard part. Welcome to my brain, everybody. I'm not ever going to claim to be an expert at understanding drugs or medications to the degree at which doctors do, because that is what they're trained in. That's also where the large majority of their experience lies. But in that same breath, you know, my whole studies, my whole experience clinically as well is to do with nutrients, herbs, supplementation with those. And so it can feel really easy sometimes to go, well, in a hierarchical conventional system, doctor is up the top. But when you really step back and think about it, or when I think about it, I go, well, actually, it's not as black and white as that. They're absolutely up the top if we're talking about drugs and the way they work, or we're talking about someone's leg just being cut off. Like, don't come to me. I will have no idea what to do other than to comfort you. but as far as nutrients and understanding those, and even understanding the supplement industry, hand up, like we are the experts in that space. And I think it's okay that we claim that and share that. And everyone's, you know, self-responsibility. You choose what advice you follow and who you follow. And there should be some degree of discernment from you as well. But not letting yourself go, well, just because this person has this title, it necessarily means that they know best. Like, think about what area do they work in, what experience do they have? Because how can you know everything? I would not expect a doctor to know everything about every nutraceutical or herbal supplement, because how could you fit all of that information in your brain?
Totally. You literally can't. And I had the same experience when I've had a major veterinary challenges over the last couple of months, and in speaking to the vets about stuff, you know, they were Googling it in front of me because they didn't know, which I really respect, to be honest, that they're willing to have a little look and are willing to look while you're there. But it literally is a whole other subject and realm of understanding. And we're really excited to share, you know, what we have to share about the subject, because it's such an important one when it comes to not only the health of the mom and the pregnancy, but in particular, the genes that you gift to your child at conception, and of course the way you nurture and grow them during pregnancy, is heavily and almost entirely dependent on nutrients being the messengers and the building blocks. Of course, lifestyle is important, and diet by extension of the conversation around nutrients is key, and we've already done an episode on that. But this really changes the game with your ability to have an enjoyable, healthy pregnancy, and also the well-being of not only your baby in utero, but for the rest of its life. So, you know, you're stacking the deck in favor of your child's well-being, longevity, IQ, hand-eye coordination, and therefore their ability to learn, earn an income, be a great human. So in case you can't tell, I take this job really seriously.
No, not at all. Yeah, I agree. And you know, when we're talking about preconception supplementation, one question that I know comes up a lot is, well, how long before trying to conceive should I start? And this is always a really tricky one to answer as a practitioner, because you never want to make someone feel disempowered as far as, you know, comparing the perfect amount of time to a time that's going to make a difference. And the way I think of it is that in my mind, like, ideal would be 12 months prior to actively trying to conceive. That is not always realistic, because a lot of people will only come to someone like you and I when they're already like, okay, I want to try and conceive. And then usually the bargaining for me on my end is usually trying to, if they are willing, and it's always their choice, is trying to at least buy ourselves 4 months, 3 to 4 months, because it's a way that you can, I really see it as an investment, because the more, like, all of that stuff that we're about to talk about in relation to egg quality in particular, you're not influencing it when you are actually pregnant. You're like, to the degree that we want to, we're influencing it in those 12 months prior, or at the very least the 3 to 4 months prior. And that's why, if you've ever seen a naturopath or nutritionist that's working in this space before, they often will have the conversation, or should have the conversation with you around, well, if this is what you want, if optimizing egg quality and producing the healthiest DNA and therefore the healthiest baby that you can, and minimizing miscarriage risk the most, this is ideally what you would do, from a very non-judgmental space. But I know that a lot of people want the information and then be able to make that informed choice.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. And knowing the influence that it has on the unborn child, that's why we're so passionate about this, you know, in particular. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is, you know, for example, nutrients, everyone knows, and I'm using air quotes here, that folic acid helps to reduce the risk of neural tube defects. It's actually folate or 5-MTHF, if we're being really anal about it.
Which we are.
And also B12 and choline are independent risk factors for neural tube defects. We'll get to that later. But the neural tube, like those things are almost complete by the time the embryo actually makes contact with the mother's, like the maternal circulation. And it's actually those nutrients on board in the sac for the egg that nourish the egg and drive so many of those early processes that are critical for the healthy development of that embryo. And so, you know, those nutrients have been onboarded in the weeks and the months prior, well, certainly the weeks prior, but the quality of the DNA in that egg has been driven by nutrient consumption and lifestyle in the months prior. Graafian follicle, I think it's like 10 months from, you know, woe to go, which is why a year is such a nice expansive, you know, chapter to really nourish and nurture your well-being, get any hormones sorted out, those kinds of things. But yes, that accelerated development that happens in the 3 to 4 months prior to the ovulation. And of course, those last couple of weeks right before ovulation, just crucial. So this isn't something you can kind of, well, people do, but I wouldn't just wake up one day and go, oh, I'm going to try and get pregnant this month. I feel like we may have touched on this before, but it's a bit of a throwback to being teens and terrified of getting pregnant. I feel like we all sort of were left with an impression that getting pregnant is easy and actually something that could just happen like that. And so we have to be super careful not to let it happen, which is why, you know, I think women think it should just be so straightforward when it comes to the time.
Yeah. And I was having this conversation with a client the other day because I think it's so deeply ingrained in us to think that way, right? That you're absolutely right. It then comes to this point where we go, okay, now I am trying to conceive. And when it doesn't happen the first month, the second month, the third month, there's this automatic thought of something's wrong with me. Like my body's broken. It's not working. And to put some context on it, like very rough figures there in like a healthy 30-year-old, like, you know, early 30-year-old woman, each ovulatory cycle, there's a 15% chance that a conception will occur. So that's, I don't know about you, but that's vastly different between the, like from there to if you look at a penis, absolutely you're going to be pregnant.
Yes.
But really far apart. But I also think that it seems that in my experience working with women going through IVF, going through IUI, or just going through a natural preconception journey, it seems that we're very quick to forget that. And I think that can particularly happen in the assisted reproductive technology space, because there's sometimes this thought that when you're doing that and you're relying so heavily on like a medical process, that it must be a guarantee, or that it must then take that 15% right up to 95%. And if it doesn't happen the first cycle, then something's wrong. And sometimes, you know, there are things that need to change, or there is something that's stopping that from being successful. And also sometimes it's just that we are working with the odds of the human body and nature in that way too. So if you're someone who's feeling really anxious that you've tried for the last, you know, 2-3 months and it hasn't happened yet, for as an example, it's okay. Like, remember those figures, that, and not to say you are a statistic, because we are all different. And I think the natural argument or thing that comes to a lot of people's minds as well, you know, my sister, my friend, whoever got pregnant as soon as they came off the pill or first try, we're always going to know, you know, people's stories that happens. What we're not going to know as much are the people who have been trying for months or years and it, you know, hasn't happened as easily, because it's not often the story that gets shared. So I think just being able to reality check yourself a bit. Yes, be thorough, have investigations, do what you can in, you know, support yourself and have the right people in your corner. Mm-hmm. And also make sure that it's not your teenage self running the show as far as expectations go.
Oh, I love that, Nat. Love, love, love. Which brings us back full circle to the fact that optimizing egg quality enhances the likelihood of you not just falling pregnant, but also like staying pregnant and actually having a healthy baby at the end of it. And this is relevant even if you are intending to, or you're in the middle of any form of assisted reproduction as well, because what assisted reproduction can't do is optimize the quality of your eggs. They might select ones that they think are better based on the current understanding of what that, how you assess that. But the work you put in beforehand will certainly give you better quality eggs and better outcomes as a result. So now, do you want to just take it away with like prenatal multivitamin? I know we sort of let the cat out of the bag by mentioning Elevate earlier, but walk us through.
Yes. Put Elevate back on the shelf, friends.
Yeah.
So when it comes to a prenatal, I think what's helpful to know is some key things to perhaps look for. Mm-hmm. I do also think that not every client of mine that's actively trying to conceive is on a prenatal, because we've made it up in other ways that are appropriate for that person. But I would say that a huge chunk of them are, but also I tend to have a few that I will go to depending on that person. So there are a few key factors that if you're going on this journey, you know, perhaps starting yourself where you're trying to pick a better option. Mm-hmm. One thing that comes to mind is, what we touched on earlier around choline. Actually, you mentioned mm-hmm. choline, and that's something I think is really important. So either within a prenatal, ideally, if you can get it in there, or separately, because choline is one I think that's often forgotten, and it is really important in the brain development of the fetus. It's important in like the function of the placenta. It's important in preventing neural tube defects. Mm-hmm. And it actually kind of works alongside folate, which is what Amy talked about previously. And a lot of the time, even, you know, on average, just generally women don't eat enough choline, and the, you know, the minimum requirement when you are actually pregnant, which I would arguably say we want to work towards when we're in that preconception window, is 450 milligrams a day. And that may even be an underestimated figure there as well. Mm. So I think just looking for at least that there is, you know, 100 or 200 milligrams of choline in your prenatal is a good start. You will get some through dietary foods as well, depending on what you're eating. Like egg yolks, liver are probably the most rich sources of them. Mm. But kind of at least making sure there is some in there, then it's not just like 10 milligrams, otherwise seeking it out separately. The other one I'll mention before I throw it back to you is, or two things. I don't recommend getting one that has iron in it unless you are currently significantly iron deficient. Mm. So a few reasons for that. One is that iron's not something you want to supplement with unless there is a need for it. Secondly, in a non-pregnant state, i.e. in this preconception window, if you are in need of extra iron, you're better off taking it separately, because alternate day dosing is more, like, has greater bioavailability than taking it within the same supplement. Things change in pregnancy, and I do sometimes give pregnant women iron containing prenatals in pregnancy, because how you absorb things and all things change in that context. But I would be looking for a prenatal that doesn't contain iron. And then the other thing is iodine. So something very close to my heart, because it so heavily relates to thyroid function. So iodine, I very much think that this is an individual dosing situation. So I have people sometimes just on a standard dose that's in a prenatal, which is usually anywhere between about 200 to 300 micrograms in a total dose of a prenatal. And I'd say that's a pretty good foundational amount to have to look for in a prenatal. But I do think that there are layers to that iodine conversation. So if you currently have thyroid autoimmunity, you may or may not need to take less of that, or you may need to be a little bit more cautious with that. Mm-hmm. If you're someone who is iodine deficient, you may actually need to take more of it. Mm-hmm. So it's more just, yes, it's ideal that your prenatal has iodine in it, and probably aiming for between that 200 and 300 microgram amount is a good dose to cover your bases. Mm-hmm. But just be mindful that if you do already currently have thyroid autoimmunity, that you may need some support around the appropriateness of that. And because sometimes giving iodine is not the safest thing if you're going through a big flare. So work with a practitioner around that. Mm. They're just my few off the bat kind of things. Do you want to talk about maybe some of the B vitamins or the folate, folic acid conversation that you mentioned previously, and some other things that you look for in a prenatal?
Yes. So we did touch on before how neither of us are fans of folic acid, and that's because it's a synthetic version of B9, vitamin B9. Ordinarily through food, we would get it in the form of folate. And so folic acid is like a step backwards, if you like, which gives the body more work to do. It needs to be converted from folic acid into folate, into dihydrofolate, into tetrahydrofolate. And from there, it goes into 5-10-methylene tetrahydrofolate. And so this is, I think, problematic even for someone without any genetic polymorphisms that might influence their ability to metabolize synthetic nutrients, because that depletes the body's resources for a start and just doesn't make sense. It's not the best choice. So at the very least, I would be making sure I'm using or choosing a prenatal that uses folate rather than folic acid, but usually you'll find it in the form of, you know, 5-10-methyl tetrahydrofolate, which is perfect, absolutely perfect. Mm. And about a third of the population have a genetic polymorphism that impacts their ability to methylate folate, which is why using the active form of B9 is my preferred kind of blanket option, because then you don't have to bear in mind someone's MTHFR status. And that's just one genetic polymorphism that can affect fertility, but probably the most well-known one. And certainly with taking folic acid, if you're not converting it, it can block up receptors, folate receptors, and in effect cause the same or create a result that is likened to a folate deficiency, even though you're currently trying to take a form of it. So hence why we're not fans of folic acid. But in addition to that, folate and B12 work in concert with each other in a thing we call the folate methionine cycle. And so taking folate or B12 on its own can mask a deficiency of the other and also really uncouple this beautiful pathway that needs both of those things. Typically speaking, we would look to, in a regular multi, a ratio of 1-1, but in the case of fertility, we're always going to see a little bit more folate just because that's the one that has the most research on it as far as NTT goes. That being said, B12 is an equal and independent risk factor for neural tube defects, just like choline, just like folate. And so having a good amount in there and a good form as well. So again, cyanocobalamin is fine, but I would prefer there's four different types of B12. There are better versions than that. And methylcobalamin would be the one that I would indicate to me that multi is a better formulation because it's already got the methyl group attached. Now, of course, there are individual circumstances where that's not the right one. In overmethylators, we would choose probably hydroxycobalamin.
I love hydroxycobalamin.
Hydroxy.
A little bit of like a
For the win.
Yeah, the underdog that's really a superstar.
Absolutely. It's like the cousin that kind of gets forgotten but is actually a rock star in its own right. So, you know, that's the other option, you know, we can consider. But by taking a methylated B12, you remove the need for folate to be remethylating the B12 for the methionine cycle. So anyway, getting a little bit nerdy, but this is why choosing a quality formulation really matters, because it's less work on your body, more bioavailable nutrients to actually perform the functions that you're taking it for. Mm. And in some, you know, more extreme cases, we can see synthetic versions of nutrients actually blocking up the flow, the natural flow of enzymatic activity in the body. So definitely those are things that I'd be looking out for. Other important things in there, in fact, I might even touch on what I would not want to see in the prenatal. For very well-meaning reasons that appear logical on paper, I see some prenatal formulations, including fish oil or EPA and DHA or DHA, on its own. And that's because essential fatty acids are essential for our well-being. They're essential for embryonic and fetal development. And particularly in those later trimesters, there's a huge demand for DHA in particular. The issue that I have with that is they are the most sensitive fatty acids to oxidation out of all the fatty acids, and therefore they need to be manufactured and encapsulated correctly so that they don't go rancid. And this is actually something I think supplement manufacturers can struggle with at times. There's actually a really tricky process that fish oils need to go through. And of course, there's always post-manufacturing batch testing to make sure that it hasn't oxidized. Now, putting it in with a bunch of other nutrients in a tablet or a capsule is just a surefire way to ruin it. And also, you don't get a therapeutic amount. Furthermore, what a therapeutic amount is determined to be changes on the stage that you're in. It increases in trimester one, it increases again in trimester two, and it increases even more in trimester three. My brain just stopped there for a moment. I need some more DHA. I haven't been taking fish oil for a while. I feel like that's a sign. And then it actually increases again in breastfeeding. So you can't take a standard breastfeeding, prenatal, preconception, pregnancy multivitamin with the essential fatty acids incorporated, because even if they weren't rancid, which I am willing to bet they are to some degree, you cannot actually get the right dose for the right chapter that you're in. So I do understand how convenient it would be. Maybe actually I have seen those tablets where there's two layers. Maybe someone will bring out something like that, although that doesn't get around the fact that you need more and more as your pregnancy progresses. But ultimately, what I'm saying is don't take a prenatal vitamin that has essential fatty acids incorporated in it for the two aforementioned reasons, and be mindful of the quality of the fish oil you're also choosing as well, for obviously oxidative reasons, but also heavy metals, man-made pesticides, things like that. Again, this is why working with a clinician is a very good idea.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think it can feel really overwhelming, as we said at the beginning. And I think that's sometimes why it is good to get some help in the beginning. Even if you don't have anything, you know, fertility challenges going on, I actually think just getting someone to assess your situation, optimize things for you, and just get you set up on a really nice, beautiful, supportive supplement regime can just take a lot of this like, wait, what, out of it. But also totally appreciate that sometimes you just want to do your own thing for a bit, which is cool. And look, there are probably some more things to add about prenatals, but that's definitely the chunk of it, and some key things that you can take away with you. The next thing that we wanted to move on to are, you know, some other key nutrients or nutraceuticals that we look for or we use that are in our clinical toolkit when we're supporting someone on that kind of preconception journey. So one that comes to mind for me that's definitely a frequent flyer over here is ubiquinol. So basically, like your immature eggs, your oocytes or oocytes, depending on how you want to say it, they are, and these are essentially the things that will then hopefully become a dominant follicle and eventually become a baby. So those immature eggs, so to speak, that are going through a maturation process, they have the highest number of mitochondria or energy producing cells, so to speak, in your body. So it's, for context, it's something like 1 to 2 more times that of a muscle cell or a brain cell, which you can imagine that they would require a lot of energy to function. And so basically where ubiquinol or CoQ10 comes into this is that it allows that energy production to happen to support the energy of that egg or that egg maturation. So I think of it very much of a giving the egg energy to do its thing, to be able to mature in a healthy way. And I also think of it as, just something that's very supportive of healthy growth, if that makes sense. And there's lots and lots of research on CoQ10 and ubiquinol, and it is something that is even used quite commonly in the fertility world when it comes to even conventional fertility specialists. Some of them are using that. So I think that's promising because it's nice when everyone agrees for once.
Yes. You know what? Just on that note, it can take up to 17 years for research to filter down into clinical practice. And so I personally think it's wise, no matter what aspect of your health and well-being and your goals are, to work with a variety of practitioners, because sometimes, you know, those that are doing the heavy lifting, like I can imagine in a fertility clinic, it's this relentless like grind of in and out, you know, drug timing, egg retrieval, you know, all the rest of it. It can be hard. We were actually chatting about this the other day. It can be really hard staying across all the research. It really can. And no one can know everything about everything. In fact, it's not even possible to know everything about your favorite subject. You know, one of mine is certainly fertility and preconception. Another is mold. But, you know, every week I do dedicate a bit of time to do a bit of research. And still, there's stuff that I'll see shared from other people working in this space that I'm like, oh, that's great to know. Didn't know that. And just kind of add that to my memory bank. So it is so wonderful when it finally, you know, does reach the front line. But I personally am not willing, for my own well-being or for my clients, to wait for it to reach the front line before calling it into, you know, into the program if there's evidence for it. But with CoQ10, this is definitely one of my favorites. Again, few different forms, and up until about 10 years ago you could only get ubiquinone or ubiquinone, but ubiquinol is the active form. And again, some people have challenges with converting it into that active form, so I always go to what's the best practice. Using ubiquinol is it for me. And you know, like Nat said, it's such a critical nutrient. At, you know, mitochondrial function declines with age. So this is particularly important if you are going to be an older mum or you're attempting to add to your family a little bit later in life. But CoQ10 has been found to preserve egg quality and fertility. So even if you're younger and you know you want a family a little bit later on, this is a good thing. It's good for your energy anyway, brain health, cardiovascular health, but helps to preserve fertility and egg quality. It also is associated with higher quality eggs and a higher pregnancy rate. It lowers the rate of chromosomal abnormalities, which is really interesting. We know with chromosomal abnormalities, there's a lot of different things that play into that, including methylation, which is again why we recommend active forms of folate and not folic acid. But antioxidants are also critical there to protect against DNA adducts, and therefore changes in the chromosomes that we wouldn't want to see. Interestingly, in IVF, CoQ10 has been found to result in more fertilized eggs and a higher proportion of quality embryos. And actually, you know, I'd like to just acknowledge and give thanks to the IVF space for actually providing us the opportunity to learn more, because we obviously can't extract an embryo from a woman trying to conceive and actually tell these things. But in the laboratory, we're learning more and more about the influence of these nutrients, and it's really adding to the body of evidence of research that we have. And I guess just by extension of that too, as far as the maternal experience goes, low levels of CoQ10 are associated with complications in pregnancy. You are more likely to develop preeclampsia. You are more likely to develop HELLP syndrome, which is like an extreme form. It's like preeclampsia, hemolysis, elevated liver enzymes, low platelets. You're also more likely to have a spontaneous miscarriage, a late miscarriage, and preterm delivery. And so CoQ10 is one of those nutrients that you really, really want to pay attention to, not only in the preconception space, because it increases the chance of you getting pregnant, having a healthy baby, but also, you know, actually having a healthy pregnancy throughout. So CoQ10, definitely one of our favorites. Another one of our favorites is, which does feature on our podcast and other episodes, is NAC, or N-acetylcysteine. And NAC isn't just, honestly, it's been the MVP during COVID, because it's an amazing mucolytic to help stop, you know, phlegm and sputum clogging up the lungs. And
can we just stop for a moment and appreciate the word sputum?
Sputum.
It's one of my favorite words to say. Sputum.
Sputum.
Yeah, I just want to support your sputum.
Yeah.
Okay, we can move on. I promise that I'm not usually more mature than this. Let's just move right along.
Let's just move on. So here's where it's really cool preconception wise. It obviously optimizes cervical mucus, making it easier for sperm to get through and fertilize the egg. So love that, especially if you've got sticky mucus. It's also an amazing antioxidant that helps to amplify glutathione production. And so generally speaking, when it comes to fertility, it improves egg quality, it improves fertility, it's been shown to reduce miscarriage risk, and this is possibly because it's been shown to lower homocysteine levels in ovarian follicles. Now, we know homocysteine is a metabolite that in elevated amounts contributes to inflammation and oxidative damage and ultimately DNA damage in the body. This is also PS, where folate, B12 and choline play a role, maintaining healthy homocysteine levels. So don't overlook that. But NAC also helps to contribute to this in a therapeutic way. Additionally, a couple of conditions that can make fertility a bit more challenging are an endometriosis that's been found to improve egg quality and reduce pain. And in PCOS, it's been found to restore ovulation. Nat's got a great one for that coming up also. Also improves egg and embryo quality and increases the change of pregnancy. Guess what? It also reduces miscarriage rates by 60%. 60%. That is bloody huge. And this has only been shown in PCOS patients. However, it's because it's only been studied in PCOS patients at the moment. So I would suspect that the rates would be similar across the board. And furthermore, with assisted reproduction and IVF, more eggs were retrieved when NAC was used and the pregnancy rate was much higher. So NAC for the win, and it's a bit of a safer option than going straight to glutathione. Like, I love glutathione, don't get me wrong. It's like my BFF. But some people have trouble recycling it. And so N-acetylcysteine, it just covers so many more bases and is a more, I guess, universally applicable way of driving up glutathione production.
I love that. Yeah.
Yes.
NAC for the win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, it's one of those nutrients or nutraceuticals that really does just touch so many different areas of health that sometimes I'm like, is there anything NAC can't do? Not to say that it's right for every person in every situation, but I definitely think it's a good, you know, top pick when it comes to preconception care and fertility. Mm. And you're probably already kind of getting the sense from us that there's just a huge amount of things that you can take that are supportive in that preconception window. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that is important to remember is that it's your unique situation will allow some more clarity on how much of these are relevant to you and are necessary to you, because different factors around, are there any hormonal or fertility challenges already pre-existing? What's your age at which you're trying to conceive? What is the context of your lifestyle and your diet? I definitely think that everyone can benefit from some form of supplementation. But I also think that the amount of things in there and the doses is dependent on your situation as an individual, and then also prioritizing, because sometimes we don't have the financial resources to invest in every single thing under the sun. So don't feel, or try not to, you can feel however you like to feel, but my encouragement would be to, you know, have someone support you in prioritizing the right things for you. Otherwise it can just feel like, holy shit, how do I take all these things? Am I going to fit it in? What am I doing? Kind of thing. So that would be my encouragement. All right. So as far as my next one goes, my next little pick of from the toolkit would actually be myo-inositol. So I think this has some beautiful research around it, both in terms of egg quality, in terms of regulating ovulation, in terms of supporting hormonal balance in the context of PCOS, yes, but also generally it has a really positive impact on egg quality. I also really like it for helping if anyone has any kind of blood sugar dysregulation. Also can be really helpful for sleep. And I guess this might be a bit of a left of center way of bringing this in, but if you're someone who's got a lot of sleep trouble, anxiety around the whole preconception stuff, and it's affecting your sleep, then I love inositol where it ticks a number of different boxes. So I think it's a really beautiful one to add in. And what is really nice about some of these things is you can often mix them together and kind of put it all in one. So as an example, a lot of my fertility clients will be on N-acetylcysteine and inositol and maybe like a calcium magnesium powder, and you can actually mix all those things together and it just be a lot simpler, because the reality is not everyone is great at remembering to take supplements. So where we can kind of consolidate or put a lot of things together, it's really beneficial. And both like inositol is very well tolerated as well in terms of taste.
Yes, so good. I mean, when you said about NAC, is there anything it can't do? I feel like it's the same for this nutrient. It's especially good with PCOS because it acts as like insulin driven PCOS, because it acts like a second messenger, but it acts like a second messenger for a lot of different signaling agents and just makes everything work better. I mean, it's literally a triphosphate. So you've got more opportunities for ATP production. And can we just take a moment for how cool it is? That
it is very cool. And just to clarify for people, like when we're saying ATP production, it's like energy production, and you need energy to ovulate, you need energy to you know, grow healthy eggs. So whenever we're referring to things like ATP, it's just think of it as energy production. Like the thing that we're trying to make happen is driven often by ATP.
Yes, amazing. So many good things. We're just so lucky to live in a time where we have this information too.
Before we kind of touch on extra things in the toolkit, there's a couple of other ones that I know we really wanted to make mention of. So, you know, one of them being also vitamin D. I think that it's really important to, and again, this is like one of those nutrients where I wouldn't necessarily say that there's a perfect dose for everyone. It's really quite dependent on what are your current vitamin D levels. So my encouragement would very much be to make sure that you have gotten your vitamin D levels tested and ideally correcting them prior to actively trying to conceive, so that when you do conceive, they're already in a really good place. But vitamin D is incredibly important for the development of the growing infant or fetus. It's also very important for you as a mum, and there's lots of research to say that if you know, babies that are born to vitamin D deficient mothers have more health complications. And so I really think that rather than it being take X amount of vitamin D, make sure your vitamin D levels are optimized prior to conception, because that's going to help reduce the risk of things like asthma and type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, schizophrenia, language impairment in that baby. So optimal for me, because I know that's probably a question that comes up, is I really like to see my clients sit somewhere between about 100 and 150 in terms of vitamin D levels. And different people have, different practitioners have different variations on that. But I certainly wouldn't want anyone to be below 100 if we're talking optimal.
Yes. And just for some context around that, women whose vitamin D levels are insufficient have a 94% increased risk of miscarriage. So it's absolutely huge. And also the partner, by the way, I know we've kind of done men already, but there's a 3 times higher chance of pregnancy if the male partner has good vitamin D levels too. And I wonder if that's why, you know, we see sort of pregnancies happening in summer and then babies born in spring, like 9-10 months later. And it's just, you know, it helps to regulate the immune system to prevent rejection of the baby, and obviously reduces the risk of miscarriage significantly, and protects your immune system as well, like from infection. So yes, definitely. Love.
All right. So your last pick from the toolkit. I know it's hard job. You can do it. what is the last one you want to share about?
Oh God, this is hard for me, especially as you know, I'm not good at reining myself in or keeping myself concise. But I'm going to roll with alpha lipoic acid, which is, look, I wouldn't consider this an essential nutrient for preconception care at all. However, it plays a significant role in optimizing fertility for women for a number of reasons. So just generally speaking, it does improve egg maturation, so likely quite helpful in PCOS, where there's a sometimes a delayed maturation of eggs. It improves embryo viability. It also does improve insulin sensitivity and ovulation in PCOS patients. But there's a couple of other things around it that I really love. So it's one of only very few antioxidants that is both fat and water soluble. So what does that mean? When you look at our cells, tissues, organs, glands, all of our cells have got typically a watery cytoplasm inside and a phospholipid bilayer that does incorporate various other lipids in there, saturated fats, essential fatty acids. When we take a water-soluble antioxidant, let's say vitamin C, it offers its antioxidant activity or reduces oxidative stress in watery tissues only. So I guess intracellularly, extracellular matrix for sure, but not the lipid-rich tissues of the body, which includes, you know, the myelin sheath of the nervous system, the brain. And it's the same, you know, conversely, it's true for fat-soluble antioxidants. It only is able to provide antioxidant activity for the fatty tissues. And so this is like an all-in-one. But not only that, but wait, there's more. No steak knives, but it also recycles coenzyme Q10. And we've just spoken at length about why CoQ10 is so important. And it also helps detoxify heavy metals. Now, heavy metals jam up enzyme systems, can displace key nutrients, including zinc, which is important for, you know, hormone health and fertility. So it's a bit of a heavyweight champion when you've got like difficult cases, maybe major oxidative stress, maybe heavy metals, things like that. So it's not one that I necessarily recommend regularly and all the time, but if you've got to call it on off the bench, those are the reasons why that you would.
I love it. Heavyweight champion. I'm going to roll with that. I like it. Awesome. And, you know, a couple of other things that I just wanted to make mention of, we won't go into detail with these, but just other nutrients that are in the toolkit that you might want to consider having a discussion with your practitioner about. And some of them will have small amounts in a prenatal, but I usually would be supplementing extra outside of that for most people are things like zinc, magnesium, calcium, depending on dietary intakes and amounts in prenatals, resveratrol. Although the herbal side of things, I think really should be very much something that's supported by a practitioner, because you can, like, for lack of a better word, F your cycle up if you don't know what you're doing. And so I think that's where I would definitely recommend no kind of personal experimentation or really rant. Like, one of my pet peeves is just super bloody random mixes of quote unquote hormone herbs in just supplements out there, because I don't know about you, but I read some of them and I go, these herbs are literally doing opposite things. Like, you'd give this one for one purpose and you would absolutely not give this for that same purpose. So I think, you know, when it comes to fertility and preconception care, herbs can be used and can be used very safely and effectively, but only if you've got someone in your corner that knows what they're doing and is supporting that journey. But I think the ones that we've talked to as far as nutrients goes, they're very much something that is going to be supportive of egg quality and also many of them hormonal health across the board as well. And if that's all you do, I think that's like just an incredible foundation to lay down. Is there anything else you wanted to add around the conversation of supplementation or nutrients for preconception care or egg quality?
Yeah, it's technically not a nutrient, but we'll just let this one go through to the keeper. But probiotics are something that I would consider. If you're working with a clinician and you're doing a preconception protocol, whether that's 4 months, 10 months, 12 months, you will undoubtedly do some kind of gut repair and restoration program as part of that process. But if you are like most women who are like, I want to get pregnant yesterday, and this is like, you know, you're just diving in boots and all, I would include a probiotic. And that's because probiotics taken in pregnancy do a lot of things for both mother and child. They reduce the incidence of gestational diabetes mellitus by improving maternal fasting glucose. They reduce preeclampsia rates. They reduce the risk of preterm labor. They reduce levels of CRP, which is an inflammatory protein. They also reduce the risk of infection for the mother in terms of urinary tract infections, thrush, and group B strep by 81%, which is absolutely huge. And also, if, you know, with a successful pregnancy, reduces the risk of chronic diseases later in the baby's life for them. So the reduces the risk of obesity, diabetes. We actually know that those bacteria, well, bacteria from the mother's gut is not only being delivered to the baby through the breast milk, but also across the placenta and in utero. And we can actually, we now know there's evidence that the baby's immune system's responding. So there's definitely, this is one of those spaces where we're going to see a lot more information come out about all the different mechanisms of action and the resulting outcomes and benefits. But what we do know now is the microbiome of the baby's being primed right from day dot, just about. And also it can affect their health for the rest of their life to come. It also can help reduce the risk of constipation and therefore some of the complications of that in pregnancy. So, you know, once upon a time, I would have said probiotics and, you know, for preconception or pregnancy were a nice to have, like the icing on the cake. with the evidence that we have now, I feel like they actually have to be an essential part of preconception nutrition if the budget allows for it. Obviously, if it doesn't, there are other things you can do as far as gut health goes and, you know, improving your own microflora. So don't feel like, you know, something terrible will happen if you don't take one. But if it interests you, the evidence is certainly there that it forms a really crucial part of preconception well-being as well. What about you, Nat? Any little last punters you want to chuck in there, or have we exhausted everyone at this point?
No, I think we've done a very good job there, if I do say so myself. And hopefully no one's feeling completely overwhelmed. If you are, outsource that bad boy. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just really good to open up that conversation and know that there is so much that you can do and to really choose to see that as a very empowering thing. And yeah, as I said, pull on support. If it feels overwhelming, it's okay that that's the case. And sometimes all it takes is just having, you know, a few sessions to have someone put you on the right track and settle you into a good routine for you and really get clear on the right thing for you and then move forward from there. And eyes on your own lane is one thing I always try and encourage when it comes to this preconception journey, because it is so unique. And I think there's a lot less pain if we really try hard not to play the comparison game. Easier said than done, absolutely. And maybe in the future we'll do a bit of a more of like a mindset or an emotional well-being episode on that preconception journey, because I think that's a really big piece to it as well.
I agree. What a great idea.
Yeah. Thank you. So we will leave it there, friends. If you've got any follow-up questions or anything that you'd like to add or suggest for the podcast, please feel free to reach out. Otherwise, we will see you all again next week.
Bye for now.